Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the CCFR Podcast. I'm your host for this week, filling in for Morley Knight. This is Rod Giltaka. I'm currently the president of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights. Thanks for joining me. This week, we're going to have it's going to be an abbreviated but a little bit longer episode at the same time. How is that even possible? But basically, here's how it works. I'm going to go through a couple of updates, very minor ones. I'm not going to tell you about all the gun shows and stuff like that that Morley would normally do, but just talk about a couple of things going on at the CCFR. And I will have an interview with Scott Carpenter, who is the owner of International Shooting Supplies in Surrey, British Columbia. You may have heard Scott's name and heard a reference to his business on occasion, because he's been a friend and an avid supporter of the CCFR since we started. So real quick, let's talk about some of the things going on at the CCFR.
And now, a CCFR update.
So some of you may have noticed that we are doing a membership drive. So we've gotten some comments back. I think a big part of our community isn't used to having a membership drive happening all the time, where we're like, yeah, you got to step up and you got to take part and participate in this whole thing. But the reason for the membership drive is it's kind of an interesting story, so I thought I'd share it with you. We were updating our achievement list, and this achievement list for the CCFR is encompasses about 20 months, 21 months of work, of actual, since we started taking memberships to just recently, you know, when we cut off the list. And as we were going through there, I did a version that was a little bit more boots on the ground kind of style, where I took a lot of the fluff out there. You know, I didn't talk about, yeah, we have a new website or anything like that. And that's all very hard fought work by people at the CCFR, but it's not really a direct benefit to our members. So I took all that stuff out and added some of the new things that we had been up to. And when I actually looked at the list at the end of the whole process, I was just floored by what we've accomplished in 20 months. I've never seen anything like it as long as I've been a gun owner. I haven't been political, honestly, to be clear. I haven't been political for that long, but I'd never seen so much activity by a group in such a small amount of time. And it, to be honest, it made me mad. I just went, why the heck are we doing all this work and only a small number of people are supporting us? And I think it's the same for all gun groups. And I made a video while I was driving. I had to go to Costco to get some stuff for work, and I made a video while I was driving down the road, and that video was just almost kind of an update video for general consumption, which I'm going to upload and put into our main Facebook group. And basically it explains this. There's 2.1 million licensed gun owners, around 20,000 people in Canada are politically active. Now, have more people than 20,000 people written a letter to their MP, let's say on the CZ-858 or whatever, or some other scandal, you know, associated with firearm regulation? Yeah, absolutely. But people that actually take money out of their wallet, go to the computer, go to the website of a gun group and actually buy an individual membership by choice, it's less than 20,000. And one of the things I explained in this video that I had uploaded is sometimes you'll hear like, oh, we have 27,000 members. Oh, we have 80,000 members. That's not entirely true. It's practically true. But how that works is the overwhelming majority of these members, let's say if I used a number like 80,000, are club members. That means that these are people that are members not by choice, but are given a membership as part of an insurance package to their shooting club. So you would refer to those as club members. And in one scenario, those club members actually aren't voting members, and they weren't people that asked for a membership. They were given a membership as a condition to buying insurance for the shooting club that they're a member of. And so you really can't, like, you can say those are members, absolutely, because factually that's true. But these aren't actual supporters, and they're not full price members either. So, you know, that they're not a real serious revenue generating group. Maybe at volume they would be, but not particularly at a lower level. And then you have another scenario where to buy club insurance, you have to have all of your members be full members. So full voting members of a firearm organization. And there's a scenario like that going on in Canada as well right now. Lower numbers that results in. But still, I mean, those people are not people that went out of their way to support a gun group. They went out of their way to be a member of a shooting club for whatever reasons they did that. So that's where I come up with a very small group of people doing all the work and doing all the financial support to these gun groups. We have to have strong gun organizations if we're going to get the results that we want. So that means, what does that mean by, you know, by default? It means that the overwhelming majority, like absolutely overwhelming of majority of gun owners do really nothing. They may write a letter, but even that's about 1% that will write a letter on behalf of protecting their own rights to own and use firearms, right? So what the whole membership drive was me going, you know what? People have got to get involved. You know, I can't do this forever personally. I know the other board members can't do it forever. Our field officers do a lot of work. They can do it forever. Their lives are going to change. We need new people helping, and we need people to support gun organizations. I mentioned the NRA. People are like, when are we going to have a Canadian NRA that represents all gun owners, whether they're handguns, shotguns, or rifles? And when are they going to be influential and powerful enough to get our, you know, our needs met? And we're never going to have an organization powerful enough or as powerful as the NRA, because the NRA has an annual budget of $350 million. So until we have a lot more people participating, you know, the annual budget of our gun groups is like $1 million, right? So, you know, it's not, on average, it's probably a far less than that. And ZCFR, we're a brand new group. We've been around a year and a half. It'll be 2 years this November. And certainly our budget is not $1 million. It's about one quarter of that. So what can you, how many programs can you do? No one's done more programs in such a short period of time as the CCFR. But as a result, you know, we don't have the money to do as much as we could. So all that to say, money makes the world go round. I didn't make the rules, but they exist. For us to continue to do programs and to do as much as we've done, we need to have people being members and donating $10, $5, $20 when they can. You know, it's funny, we had another discussion. I don't want to mean to go on and on about it, but just so you can kind of get the reason why I want to share this is so you can get kind of the behind the scenes workings and the ideology of, you know, how we make decisions and how we, you know, craft our messaging and why we say the things we do or do the things we do. Is that, you know, I mentioned in a meeting just a while back, we need to get to a place where the average gun owner is donating anywhere from $60 to $100 a year. And I mean every one of them, if not a very high percentage of them. When that happens, when people say, you know what, my protecting my rights and giving a certain amount of money to the gun group that I think is going to make the most difference, until that's worth $60 a year to me, you know, which is what, 24 beer in, you know, a communist regime province like Ontario or British Columbia, where, you know, a 24 pack of beer costs $56. You know, and so that's what it is, a 24 pack. If that's not worth, you know, protecting your rights to you, then I guess you'll get whatever you have coming your way. And I see so much complaining and not a lot of action. And, you know, if you're familiar with how I operate, I'm all about doing stuff. I'm all about action. So I just want people to get that bug, right? Because it's very rewarding too at the same time. So anyway, that's why we're doing this membership push. We have a really huge project coming up. And it is going to be, again, never before even contemplated, much less done, but it's going to take money. So we're trying to get to a point where we can make that announcement somewhere around October to November. So look forward to that coming. In other updates, we also have recently purchased an advertising package to Wild TV. I'm pretty sure that's never been done, although someone said it had been done before, but we actually have television commercials in production, and we'll be running, including bumpers and all kinds of other things, during the episodes of Canada Hunts on Wild TV starting this coming March. So look for CCFR to be going mainstream. And the reason why we're doing that project is we are preaching to the converted, absolutely, but we're trying to get gun owners to get involved. So until we can have a gun group that can boast 100,000 individual memberships, paying memberships, that's when we're really going to be in a position for, let's say, you know, a staffer in Ottawa gets a call from the CCFR, like, you know, minister, the CCFR is on the phone, you know, and the minister goes, well, what do you think they want? I mean, that's where we need to be, right? And we're not going to be that until we actually have like 100,000 real members. And when is that going to be? That's going to be when gun owners actually step up and actually get involved. So that's what we're trying to encourage. So that's why we're doing the Wild TV. Who knows? They have a subscriber base of 2.5 million. Those aren't all people that are sitting watching the show that we're advertising on, but let's hope we can grow our membership. You know, I'd be really excited if we got half of that, 50,000 members. So let's see if we can get there. If you're a gun owner and you want to do something for your own, to protect your own rights, as I say, to own and use firearms, then tell your other gun buddies, hey man, you need to pry out $40 a year or $40 and a $20 donation. You got to get involved at some level if you want to be able to shoot your guns out in the bush. You know, in BC, we just lost a whole bunch of area in the bush because we didn't have strong enough representation, or even, you know, any way to petition the government to not do the things that they did. So anyway, all that to say, get involved. All right, now for the main event. I will spin this interview that I recorded with Scott Carpenter from International Shooting Supply. So I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you after.
And now, a CCFR exclusive interview.
Hey everybody, we're back and we're going to have an interview with one of my favorite people, Scott Carpenter from International Shooting Supplies. And, you know, if you've been around the CCFR for a while, you're probably aware that Scott has been a supporter of the CCFR from early on in our evolution, right from day one. I think that relationship is one of the things that made the CCFR able to get where we are today. And it's just really good to have him here. How are you, Scott?
I'm good, Rod. Thanks for having me in today.
Thanks for coming in. Okay, so first question. So you own a gun store, or quite a nice store.
Thanks.
And you're also a gun owner, and you're also supporting firearm rights advocacy groups like the CCFR.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of line is that? What kind of line is that like to walk for you, for being, you know, regulated by an agency that we are actively advocating, I'm not going to say against, but against, to have regulatory reform. Is that a tough way to do business?
Well, I mean, there's always a risk that you're going to upset somebody or the wrong person, you know. Certainly, we never attack anyone individually. That would be a really obnoxious thing to do. So we avoid that sort of thing. And I've always maintained a good relationship with my CFO, and I will continue to maintain a good relationship with him. We run a clean business, and you know, anyone, and I think that goes for the vast majority of independent gun shops in this country. They operate on the same MO, and I think that as long as you walk that line and you know where the boundaries are, that you shouldn't have anything to worry about. And so even though, yeah, it can sometimes linger in the back of your mind that maybe somewhere there's someone sitting in a room thinking about what you're saying and they're not very happy about it, that in general, you're dealing with human beings, which we do, and we just maintain a good relationship with them, and we abide by the rules and regulations, and, you know, we carry on, and we have to carry on, because if we don't, we end up moving from the holding pattern that we seem to be in right now into more defensive action over and over and over again.
Okay. And this spawns another question, actually. So there's some level of inherent risk in being an activist at some level.
Yeah.
And at the same time, being in a highly regulated business like selling firearms in Canada.
Yeah.
What made you decide that the CCFR, like, what is it about the CCFR that made you decide to get on board early and to provide the level of support that you actually have provided us?
Okay, well, I'll start by saying that I support a variety of not just gun rights organizations, but, you know, like the BC Wildlife Federation and some other groups as well. And, you know, I believe that everybody has their place and is doing their own thing and in their own way, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. What drew me to the CCFR was that their mandate was a little different. You know, what we're really embroiled in here in the long run is basically and we've talked about this before, is sort of like almost like a cultural conflict. And you know, if you don't address things like public opinion and public perception, then the legal aspect of it becomes much more difficult to deal with in the long run. In fact, if you're only dealing with the legal aspect of of the culture in the industry, and you're not dealing with public perception on a regular basis, if you're not dealing with your own cultural group on a regular basis, then you're not going to win the long game here. You're gonna lose it. So that's what drew me to the CCFR.
Yeah, and actually to expand on that or to add something interesting thing, I think I had a conversation via social media with somebody, and you know, it was a detractor, and we mm-hmm. have a handful of those. They're very loud.
Haters gotta hate.
That's right. There's not a lot of them, but they are very vocal.
Yeah.
And I think one of the only things that they could come at us with, they said, "Well, how many court cases have you won?" And you know,
yeah, I mean, there's organizations working on those types of issues already. So do we need another one? Probably not.
Well, certainly not. But here's the point, though. And I would agree. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, taking action, suing the government, all the rest of that. That's all good stuff. But at the end of the day, we're trying to claw back some of those rights that we've lost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it comes to having a liberal government that has made it very clear that they want to further restrict, you know, our activities.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the court case kind of aspect of it, well, I know another organization, they spent $100,000 at the Supreme Court winning a court case that said that the Quebec long gun registry data needs to be destroyed, and they won it. And it was a great victory for gun owners. And then here we are a couple years later, not even 2 years later, and they're like, oh yeah, well, never mind that, forget that. We actually still have the data and we're going to use it. So, you know, I think it was a good education for me going, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to use a word like rigged, but it's just like, you know, you can go ahead and pass legislation to delete data, and then they just don't do it anyway, and nobody is doing anything to them. Nobody's going, you broke the law. There's just subject.
You know, the problem with fighting, it's the problem with fighting any of these battles is you're limited to fighting the amount of warfare that you can afford to fight. Nobody's pockets are endless and bottomless. So, I mean, you can't win them all, and you can't go back and fight every little issue on a legal end. But what you can do is try and prevent more of it from happening in the first place. And politicians understand one thing really well, and that's votes. And I think that one of the main reasons that the Liberal government at this stage hasn't done more, because they've been in power for long enough now that they could have tabled some pretty ugly legislation at this stage. The only reason they haven't done more at this stage, and why they've basically left what has happened to the RCMP, is because votes matter. And because right now, the issue of firearms in the culture itself is one that is still a little bit too much of a hot potato for them to juggle. And that hot potato needs to stay hot. And the longer that potato stays hot, the harder that issue gets for them to deal with, the less likely they are to table it and bring in more legislation to make our lives more difficult.
Well, I would always remind anyone, and we have actually, because we do have at least we're on speaking terms with the Liberal government, which is great. And I've had many a conversation with public safety, which is awesome. I've never claimed that they listen to me.
<You know? laughs> But at least you can talk to them.
At least where there's still a conversation going on, right? And I wouldn't want to take credit for anything, because I can't claim to control what the government does. Absolutely not. They have a mandate and their own interests. But I think some of those conversations where maybe some attention was drawn to, hey, remember when you guys were involved in the gun registry? Remember how you were relegated to a third party status, almost fourth party status?
Yeah, we were going to start calling them the Green Party or something like that.
It was pretty serious the last time that they did something like that.
I think they remember that. You know,
I think some of them remember it. I don't think they remember it anywhere well enough.
Well, not well enough, but some of them do. And you know, it's better that some of them do than for them to live in a world where they believe that we're not paying attention. And at least some of this information is seeping around from office to office, and they're talking about it a little bit, you know. If we don't continue to address things from the cultural end, then they'll stop talking about it. and then we'll have a problem.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, the whole mandate of the CCFR started, and we continue to bypass them mm-hmm. and take it right to the people. And, you know, I've never said that we're going to turn, you know, everyday Canadians or lots or more of them into gun owners. That'd be great. But at least they'll be informed, because the worst thing is an uninformed voter.
Yeah. You know, and so you're working on essentially three aspects here, right? So we're working on gun owners themselves to bring awareness of the problem to them. We're working on the general public as well. And we're working on the politicians all at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's a three-pronged attack. And, you know, you can't deal with those aspects of the issue in the courts. These are the aspects that we should be dealing with before we ever get to the courts. We should never have to go to the courts again to sort this sort of thing out. You know, if we addressed the cultural issue first, the legal issue would eventually dry up mm-hmm. to some degree anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd also like to see a Canada at some point where, you know, the firearm file or the firearm issue is no longer a platform issue.
Wouldn't that
be
awesome?
It just doesn't even matter.
And I mean, really, should it even be when you think about it?
Yeah, well,
does Canada have a gun problem, really?
I think I might have did an explainer about that.
I think you might have.
Yeah, maybe once.
You know, how did this even become an issue? Well, it's an issue simply because somebody made it more of a cultural issue a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And now we're dealing with it now in the courts. It went too far.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, awesome. Now, it sounds like you've thought about this topic quite a bit and some other topics too. So you've started a gun blog.
Yeah, we started a blog a little while back. Call it CanadianGunBlog.com. And I'm an avid reader, so I read lots of books. I read other people's blogs, consume a lot of that kind of stuff. And I saw I saw how some of the blogs in other parts of the world, in Europe and in the US, were drawing in readership and are actually really starting to transform the culture in a lot of really interesting ways. And I thought, you know, why can't we do the same here? Why can't we use the same... The great thing about a blog is it brings in everything. It brings in writing, brings in video, brings in music. You know, it brings in memes, like these silly little pictures with a little bit of writing on them. And people share this stuff. And this is a great way for us to reach out to a lot of people on a broad scale, to give them the information that's pertinent and relevant in a really easy manner to digest, and to literally help transform the culture in our own little way. And that's our goal.
Cool. And you have a YouTube channel as well?
Yeah, our YouTube channel is small but slowly growing. We've got a couple of videos up there right now. We did a rifle review and a hunt last year. I came into the gun industry as a hunter, so that's my thing. And we're gonna actually do some more hunting videos here this fall. We're headed to Africa here shortly to shoot some hunting video, and that stuff will all be up on our blog here probably in the next 2 or 3 months. So.
Oh, that's really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of hunting, you're probably aware I've never been hunting in my life.
Yeah, I keep trying to talk you into it.
Which is kind of a testament to the fact that there's so many shooting sports and so much to do with guns.
Yes.
You know, sporting and culturally and
all of it's freaking awesome.
Yeah, and there's so much that you could have somebody like me that has, you know, been around the firearm industry and occupied whatever places I've occupied, and I still haven't been, never been hunting. So anyway, the reason I brought that up is people are probably well aware that we just recently bought an advertising package with Wild TV. And part of that advertising package is I'm going to go hunting for the first time ever.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. And it's going to be on an episode. And this is sort of fresh off the press, as in I got this information yesterday. So I don't know if it's going to happen, but at least you got a little bit to, you know, we can start some rumors churning. But it looks like I'll be doing a grizzly hunt.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to be unpopular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, with some people anyway. With guys like me, you're going to be incredibly popular.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
so you're going to be unpopular with all the right people, Rod.
Yeah. I don't care about them.
Yeah.
But they're unreasonable. I don't take advice from unreasonable people. But it's going to be a grizzly hunt, and I guess the idea is because it's going to happen in my province.
Yeah.
Probably in October. It won't be on TV till next year. But they're going to try to get a black bear tag. Right. So that I can shoot a black bear, and then if the real hunter is able to get a grizzly in the same episode, then apparently that's, I don't know anything about whether that's exciting or not, but apparently that'll be a really great episode. So
it's always exciting when a big omnivore hits the ground. Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
That's pretty neat. I don't know any of the logistics or how that's all going to work, but the person I'm interfacing with at Wild TV said, you know, you're going to need a rifle. And I said, okay, well.
You know what one of those looks like, right?
I do.
Okay,
yeah. It's got a detachable magazine. It's black. It has a plastic fore end most times, or milled aluminum. And a one-time optic with a red, glowing dot in the middle.
With the lone dot, yeah.
But
and a single point sling.
Yeah, apparently can't hunt with a handgun either.
Not here.
So yeah. Anyway, I talked to Tracy Wilson of the CCFR, and she's going to lend me her rifle. She has a Browning semi-auto with like this, you know, some all this engraving and a gold trigger and this whole thing. Ooh. And it's 270 Win. So apparently that's good enough for black bear.
That'll do you just fine for black bear.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it'll look styling too.
Yeah. Well, I asked her because she's an avid hunter, and I said, well, is that a little too blingy? Am I going to look stupid?
Not more like, so than usual.
Am I going to look ridiculous like some private investigator with a chrome handgun kicking the door in with a high port, you know, position with a handgun?
It's all about what you wear too, you know. So, I mean, we just have to make sure we get you into the right clothes for the job.
Well, yeah. this is going to be in northern British Columbia. I don't know this for a fact yet, so this is yet unconfirmed, but this is where it's going.
Okay.
But this will be in northern British Columbia at the end of October, I think.
Okay, well, I'm going to recommend a red flannel hat. And some green insulated rubber boots, possibly
and a t-shirt,
possibly a red flannel jacket too to go with a hat. If they match,
okay,
you could really get some style points.
And a double barrel shotgun.
It wouldn't hurt in case you see a grouse.
The Joe Biden special.
The Joe Biden special. Poor Joe.
Joe's defense firearms. I wonder if his Secret Service used double barrel shotguns.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably not. Anyway, it's been really great having you, Scott, and I appreciate, again, all the help that you've given the CCFR, and I appreciate you coming out to do this interview. What's the website of your store?
www.internationalshootingsupplies.com is the web store.
Awesome, and I will also post a link to Scott's gun blog site and also to his YouTube channel. Thanks again for coming out.
Thanks a lot, Rod. Appreciate it.
Awesome. That was my interview with Scott Carpenter from International Shooting Supplies. I really appreciated Scott coming in to do that. He's anytime I ask him for something for the CCFR, he obliges us. So he's just been a really great ally. So thank you very much, Scott, and I really appreciate your help. Other than that, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the CCFR podcast. Join us next time. Hopefully Morley will be back up and running for the next episode. And don't forget to buy a membership. Don't forget to donate when and if and how much you can, whenever you can. We truly appreciate it. And virtually every dollar goes to fighting the fight. And there's a fight ahead of us. So don't wait. Join now and get your friends to join. We really appreciate the support. Find us at firearmrights.ca. Take care, guys. We'll see you next time.